This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for September 17. I'm your host, Rosanna Longo-Better, and for Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the city of Longmont is poised to sign a first-of-its-kind sister city agreement with a sovereign tribal nation. Capital for Cooperatives Act is a new bill that would enable member-owned businesses to access resources that others have long enjoyed. And you have seen them on sidewalks all over East Boulder. We look at the story behind all those electric scooters. Connections comes to you at 8:30. Hosts Joel Elstein and Jim Banks interview author and academic Tony Robinson about topics ranging from threats to voting rights to the recent de facto abortion ban in Texas. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative will bring you an eclectic mix of music until noon. All that is coming up, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
Colorado-based Sisters of Charity Leavenworth Health System, or SCL Health, and Utah-based Intermountain Healthcare announced a merger yesterday. Together, the new medical systems will operate hospitals and clinics across six states. SCL Health operates hospitals along the Front Range, which include Platte Valley Medical Center, Good Samaritan Medical Center, Lutheran Medical Center, and St. Joseph Hospital. The Colorado Sun reports that SCL Health will give up its leadership and corporate name, but that the Colorado hospitals will retain their names and Catholic religious identity. According to the Colorado Sun, no staff cuts are planned, and the merger will not change SCL's relationship with Kaiser Permanente. The Colorado Geographic Naming Advisory Board unanimously voted in favor of changing the name of Clear Creek County's Squaw Mountain yesterday. The Colorado Politics reports the word squaw disparages indigenous women. The Cheyenne tribe proposed a new name, Mestehe Mountain. The name pays homage to a southern Cheyenne leader known as Owl Woman. According to the tribe's historic preservation officer, Owl Woman helped maintain good relations between white and indigenous people. In the era before white people carried out massacres and removed indigenous people from their lands, Owl Woman served as a translator and important cultural bridge. According to Colorado Politics, the Clear Creek County Commissioners have also approved the new name. The Denver International Airport has had a 125% increase in stolen vehicles in the first 7 months of this year compared to last year. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Law enforcement officials say theft rings and individual thieves have averaged stealing 16 cars a month this year at DIA and its acres of parking and rental car lots. The Denver Post reports that Denver Police Department data shows that last year, a total of 97 vehicles were stolen from locations on airport property. This year, 115 vehicle thefts were reported at DIA in just the first 7 months. DPD and airport officials say they have stepped up patrols by police and security officers in the DIA lots, including overnight. This includes license plate scanners and cameras at entry and exit points. The police say that car owner error comes into play, with cars left unlocked or valuables left visible. The police also say that car thieves are often prolific, typically stealing a car for personal use or to commit other crimes, and then abandoning or selling it within a few days. They say that most frequent targets across Metro Denver in the spring were pickup trucks and mid-range sedans. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Tomorrow, between the hours of 9 a.m. and 1 p.m., Longmont residents may dispose of their hazardous household waste at the new Waste Services Center facility located at 110 South Martin Street. This annual event is for Longmont residents only. Residents will need to provide proof of identification and a recent city utility bill as they drop off materials. Acceptable hazardous household materials include paint, paint thinners, strippers, pesticides, insecticides, fungicides, cleaning products, 1-pound propane cylinders or smaller, spa, pool chemicals, and PCP ballast. Enrollment is 1% higher than pre-pandemic levels at the University of Colorado Boulder, university officials announced earlier this week. Undergraduate students played the largest role for increased enrollment, but despite the increases, enrollment by first-year, first-generation students dropped nearly 2%. A statement for enrollment indicates changes such as test optional admissions will allow the university to better recruit underserved populations and will be a major focus for university recruitment going forward. For statewide enrollment at the Colorado Community College system, figures remain down over 10% from pre-pandemic levels. But officials are encouraged that the enrollment at the schools did not drop drastically again this year as previously anticipated. According to Joe Garcia, system chancellor, many students waited to enroll until the start of the school year in August, which made enrollment determinations difficult. According to Chalkbeat, Colorado, the community college system educates the most students of any state system and typically educates older students seeking training in high-demand jobs. Chalkbeat, Colorado reports that during the pandemic, community colleges statewide have seen a significant drop in the number of older students with families and those facing financial hardships. Google is planning to create an expansive Google campus in the heart of Boulder, BizWest reports. This week, it purchased a new chunk of office space across from their 300,000 square foot building at 30th and Pearl. Google first landed in Boulder in 2012, and since then it has expanded its workforce to about 1,500 employees. They work on developing everything from Google Maps to the Chrome browser. During the pandemic, Google offices supported fewer workers, but in late July, employers began to return. For today's weather, along the Upper Front Range metro area, skies will be sunny with highs in the low to mid 70s. Tonight will be mostly clear with lows in the upper 40s, low 50s. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 48 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Tomorrow, the city of Longmont will sign a sister city agreement with the Northern Arapaho Tribe of Wyoming. Shannon Young got the details from Janice Revan of the Longmont's Sister Cities Association.
Longmont already has a couple of sister city agreements, one with Chino Japan and another with Ciudad Guzman in Mexico. But this one with the Northern Arapaho Tribe of Wyoming is different. How so?
This is the first agreement between a U.S. city and a tribal sovereign nation. This has been in the works with the city of Longmont for 3 years when we originally visited the tribe back in 2018. The seeds of this agreement were formed at that time, and we are now really excited to celebrate this unique partnership.
What all is involved with sister city agreements? What relationships do they form, and what opportunities do they create?
Generally, it's up to the cities to decide what the relationship looks like. For our relationships with Chino and with Ciudad Guzman, we do student exchanges every summer. We send students to both communities, and then they return with students from those communities, and we have a trilateral exchange. This one will be similar. We expect initially for the Arapaho exchange to be independent of the other two, but as we develop our relationship, we eventually hope to merge the three exchanges.
Another thing that makes this agreement unique is that we are on land that was historically territory of the Arapaho people, and the nature of that territorial shift was not peaceful. It was one of violent displacement. Aside from acknowledging that fact, is there a process of healing or repair incorporated into this agreement?
So we've been working on this arrangement for 3 years. As you know, there's been many, many treaties over the years that have been broken. We acknowledge that. We can't fix that, but what we can do is build a bridge to a better future for both of our communities. Through education, through cultural opportunities, we can begin to heal some of those wounds.
Can you give us some details of the signing ceremony itself? Where will it be taking place, and at what time, and is it open to the public?
It is open to the public. It will be at 3 o'clock on Saturday at the Longmont Museum and Cultural Center. However, the reservations are filled. We will have a live stream available for those that are interested through the city live stream feed. And the signing will include performances both by Arapaho dancers, local. We will have Break Effects, who is a dance group here in Longmont. We will have the Legion Post 32 Honor Guard, as well as the Arapaho War Honor Guard. We will have performance by Tiaro and Bridget Law as all part of the celebration. And finally, we will conclude with a dinner for our guests from Wyoming and city staff and sister cities.
Janice Rebin of the Longmont Sister Cities Association, thanks for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Shannon Young, and you are listening to The Morning Magazine.
Senator John Hickenlooper's new bill, the Capital for Cooperatives Act, tries to help small businesses get loans. As it stands today, since 1953, cooperative-owned small businesses have limited access to loan money. Leaders are planning to discuss the bill's progress this coming Monday in a virtual event organized by Media Enterprise Design Lab at the University of Colorado and Zebras Unite. I spoke with Sandra Baca, Assistant Director of Rocky Mountain Farmers Union Cooperative Development Center, about why this bill is important for the existence of cooperatives in the state.
Capital for Cooperative Acts is important for cooperatives is because cooperatives have been excluded from any kind of small business administrative financing since 1953. This exclusion negatively impacted cooperatives from expanding or continuing. So as cooperative developers, we have been severely limited over the years with financing that were matched to the unique democratic structure of cooperatives. Because of our structure of one voice, one vote, limited our ability to access the grants from the Section 7A of the SBA. So the requirement of the SBA is for cooperatives to provide a personal guarantee with respect to certain administration loans. And that personal guarantee is very hard for a single person to be able to access a loan.
I'm speaking with Sandra Baca. She is the Assistant Director of Rocky Mountain Farmers Union Cooperative Development Center. Sandra is part of a panel discussion this coming September 20th, Capital for Co-ops Act. And it's going to be virtual panel discussion where people are going to be talking about the importance of having capital for co-ops. What's the difference between a co-op and a corporation?
Well, cooperatives are really unique in their business structures, as they are focused on a model that stimulates and organizes the sharing of scarce resources in communities. So a community will see a need and say, okay, an example that I have for the farming community, we have three farmers. One has transportation, one has storage, and one has food. For these three people to be able to create a cooperative and share resources and meet the needs of the community is the difference between a corporation and a cooperative. Cooperatives focus on the needs of communities, and especially underserved and communities of color.
What are the barriers that co-ops are facing nowadays?
So the barriers we face as cooperatives is that, you know, we get a group of people together, they create a steering committee, they follow the cooperative model, and then they form and incorporate, but then they don't have enough capital to continue sometimes paying their employees or having capital to build infrastructure, capital for storage, transportation. So there's many big ticket items that cooperatives do not have access to that are causing many cooperatives to go under or not continue. You know, they have to dissolve.
What else do you see as a big need besides getting more capital?
I think cooperative education is much needed. It is a model that no one understands, and it's not really spoke about like in, say, more urban communities. It's, in my understanding, it's when I started learning about cooperatives, It was something that only people in the rural areas did until I started getting more experience and doing more research. You know, I understand that now it's a model for community need. So I think for us to continue with the cooperative movement and the social movement, we need to be able to educate our communities and people on how to use this model.
When you say that it is a co-op movement, what does it mean?
A co-op movement is it's social justice, it's power in community, it's bringing people together to acquire the needs that they need. So in a community where there are food deserts, you know, a cooperative grocery store would fulfill that need. And that is the movement, you know, just being able to go into our communities, especially communities that are marginalized and underserved, and be able to provide an income and help our help groups to attain the resources to be able to do their work that they know how to do.
What's at stake if there is no capital and there is no, let's say, money to continue this co-op business model that it has shown to be successful, especially during the pandemic year?
You know, right now we have several cooperatives that are wanting to form, but they need access to capital. They need to build infrastructure. They want a brick and mortar store. So without access to any of this capital and without the Capital for Co-ops Act, cooperatives are still going to struggle, and a lot of them will fold just because they cannot continue without capital. A personal guarantee is just not the way to be able to access small business loans.
What can the general public do to support these efforts of passing a Capital for Co-ops Act?
I think that they should just push our senators and our leaders into passing the Capitals for Cooperative Act and incorporating it and allowing cooperatives to access what any other small business will be able to access.
In other words, the capital to make it move, to make it grow, to make it thrive in an economy that is a capitalistic economy. Final
yes.
thoughts.
To learn more about food justice and how cooperatives can help your communities achieve food justice, join us on September 20th for the Introducing the Capital for Cooperatives Act. This is a historic proposal for opening the doors of the Small Business Administration to cooperatives of all kinds. If made the law, this bill would enable member-owner businesses to access resources that other kinds of businesses have long enjoyed.
That was Sandra Baca, Assistant Director of the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union Cooperative Development Center. We have been talking about the importance to keep up the co-op movement that has been established and that wants to continue being strong. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better. If you live in Boulder, you have probably noticed Lime's Green scooters parked on sidewalks east of 28th Street. The scooters and e-bikes managed by B-Cycle are part of a New Year-long micro-mobility initiative in Boulder, testing out small electric-powered e-vehicles that, in other parts of the world, have boomed over the past few years. To find out what riding one of these scooters was like, KGNU's Alexis Kenyon downloaded the Lime app, checked out a scooter, and takes us along for a ride.
Okay, so I'm getting on my scooter. I just scanned the code. I'm going down Colorado. It's really smooth. The pickup is really smooth. And it's so quiet. Oh, I just passed another scooter.
When people think about Boulder, they know it as a city that prides itself on being a leader in climate-conscious and socially progressive ideas. But when it comes to transportation or implementing eco-friendly or socially progressive systems, Kevin Kryzik, an author and professor of environmental design at CU Boulder, says the city doesn't always live up to its reputation.
Boulder has not necessarily had a great track record recently in making some of the hard decisions that are necessary to make considerable progress.
In 2018, when companies deployed scooters across the nation onto city streets, a rollout that a lot of transportation experts, climate scientists, and social advocates considered a huge success, Boulder opted out. A common complaint Boulder officials wanted to avoid concerned scooters on sidewalks. DK Kemp is a senior transportation officer with the city of Boulder and the project coordinator for the city's new micromobility program.
We put some things in place that prevented our business license office from providing a license to operate within the city. So we were able to avoid that disaster.
But Kevin Kreisick says the real transportation disaster here concerns cars on streets.
You know, we're really starting to kind of realize that. And we're starting to kind of peel back the layers of that onion and say, wow, cars have really cost us when it comes to environmental issues. They've cost us when it comes to safety issues. They've cost us when it comes to equity issues. It costs us when it comes to maintenance issues.
Despite concerns, e-bikes, scooters, and other forms of micromobility have some huge benefits. They're safer than cars, which cause about 40,000 roadway deaths a year nationwide.
And even in Boulder, we're seeing that locally with the number of people who died in the past, you know, 4 or 5 months.
Then there's the environmental aspect. When you add things up, transportation is now the leading emitter of greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Colorado. Half of the cars on the road are going under 2 miles, which means if people stopped driving cars for a short commute and instead rode e-bikes or scooters or any other form of non-car transportation, it could dramatically decrease carbon emissions. Kreisick says Boulder should keep these benefits in mind when they're considering the drawbacks to scooter programs.
If we continue to go down the same road, we're going to continue to get the same answers.
Boulder's extensive network of bike lanes and multi-use paths make the city an ideal place for implementing a micromobility program. Nico Probst is the Director of Government Relations for Lyme and has been working with Boulder on creating the scooter and e-bike pilot programs. He says in the past, when Boulder has tried to encourage non-car travel options, it felt like a downgrade for commuters who were inevitably going to have to sit in even more traffic. But with new forms of micromobility like scooters, people don't have to choose between driving and getting somewhere quickly.
It's because many times a 1 mile scooter trip is going to be quicker than a 1 mile car trip. It is, I think, a key reason why individuals gravitate towards jumping on a bike or scooter. And sort of having that free flow point A to B mobility option, I think that is a key reason why we've seen such a quick shift to micromobility and why the utilization of micromobility in every city that we operate is so high.
Also, Probst says, when people get out of their cars, they experience the city in a whole new way. Studies show micromobility supports local businesses and people's feelings of connection to their community.
It's a joyful way to get around. It's like riding a magic carpet to your destination, and being able to experience some joy on your commute is, I think, a key positive trait of micromobility that has them really rethinking how they get around their city writ large. And so it's not just about scooters, but, you know, I think for too long, this isn't just in Boulder, this is in every city across North America. We have really dedicated so much of our city's street space to cars and focused on moving people around in the car and the car only. And I think in this current age, we really have to sort of rethink that paradigm.
Senior Boulder Transportation Officer DK Kemp says Boulder will wait and see how the program goes. He says city officials have been getting a lot of complaints, including complaints about scooters haphazardly left on the sidewalks. But the cons need to be weighed against the benefits.
It's an intriguing concept. I'm glad we're doing it. I am. And I think if we can maintain the safety and help people learn how to park the devices properly, it's about convenience, right? What's most convenient? What feels the safest? And what's more fun? Riding a bike is fun. You know, riding an e-scooter is fun. Is driving a car in traffic fun? No.
Back on the city streets of Boulder, micromobility is starting to show signs of success. Gua Lin is riding his own personal scooter. He says since he got it used a few months back, he only drives his car once a week to get groceries.
I think it's Boulder style in Boulder. Yeah, I love Boulder because not only it's a good city to live, but also it's eco-friendly. So I'm studying the atmospheric science. So I care about climate change and the global warming. Yeah.
Boulder City Council will meet at the end of September to talk about how the scooter pilot program is going. For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I have been your host, Rosanna Longobetter. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, and Shannon Young for their work on today's program. Stay tuned for Connections just after this news update from the BBC.